Welcome to this episode in the Coffee Science series of our podcast. And this episode is the first time I have a guest commenting on my very long science episode where I'm trying to really map out how I think science should be used and how I often think it is misused. And I'm really excited to have Samu Smerke on as the first guest, because you know what you're doing, both when it comes to coffee and science. So I'm really excited that you've taken carved out the time to be part of this podcast episode. So we'll talk about Samu's background, and also then we'll discuss the things that Samu thought when he heard the podcast, both positive and negatives. So welcome, and I'm really excited to have you here, Samu.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Morten, for inviting me to discuss and talk with you about coffee science. I'm really pleased. I'm really honored to be able to talk on this podcast. I think it's a great opportunity for the coffee community to learn a bit more how we scientists think about the experiments that we are doing in coffee, right? Yeah. And for me, all this goes back to, you know, maybe I should introduce where my background is.
Yes, please.
By training, I'm an analytical chemist. So it means that I did a PhD in, university diploma in chemistry and then a PhD in analytical chemistry. So it means that my training was understanding measurements of chemical components in different samples. So I was in particular working already before with plant extracts and polyphenols, tannins in plant extracts. So it means this kind of analytical chemistry gives you a critical thinking about methodology that you're using to know, is what I see really true? Is this the real thing that I want to see? And how do I separate different effects from different variables that I'm observing? And so a lot of these things are very much related to coffee, you know, directly this kind of things that I was doing already in my, you know, very fundamental studies before my coffee time, that is.
Yeah, and I think one of the things now our audience doesn't really know or doesn't have a chemical background in chemistry, and one of the things that I found really fascinating in when I studied biology and had first physical chemistry and organic chemistry and biochemistry, I had all those three subjects, is I think it's great reflected in a question I got from one of my students last week, where I showed you the periodic table of the elements and what a glucose molecules look like and an amino acid and stuff like that. And a student asked, but can you see this in a microscope? And I thought that was a really fascinating question, because you can't. So how do you know it's true, right? And this is where I think organic chemistry and physical chemistry is just such fascinating sciences, because it's all by inference, right?
Yes,
you have some observations, and you have to kind of with your mind understand what's going on, and it's all indirect.
Yes, exactly. This is what you know, this kind of studies, what I was doing, it's actually about, you know, you cannot see these things directly because they're too small. There's no way to see it. There are ways to see atoms nowadays, right? But in these are few people in the world who have the high tech to do it. But most of the scientists who do these studies, they don't see these things directly. They observe it through different effects that these have on different measurements. And this means you have to combine the knowledge from nuclear magnetic resonance, from the infrared spectroscopy, so how these molecules interact with infrared wave light, and then mass spectrometry. This way you can determine how heavy these molecules are, and then chromatography, which is determining how they interact through a water solution to a silica gel sorbent. And these things, you know, you combine all these indirect measurements which you're doing, and you have a sense of some data, and none of those on itself, it really gives you an idea what you're observing. But as you take all the information together, you're starting to get more and more of a clear picture on what you're doing. It's kind of as a puzzle, you know. Each of those things that you measure is one piece of the puzzle, and then you just have to bring it together. And it's kind of all this like a big brain teaser experiment, how you have to put the puzzle together to have the right picture of what is happening.
Yeah. And the right picture of something you can never really see. So you'll keep on having this weird kind of hazy reality that you're trying to infer about. So that I think that makes it fascinating. But also, having been through all this physical chemistry and organic chemistry and biochemistry, it is a very tangible world. It's really with distances and sizes of atoms and angles and stuff. It's all kind of mapped out in a really very specific picture of what's going on at a level that you can see. And that's really the beauty of the mind, that this is possible, right?
Yes, but we have to also know that we try to make it visual as we can understand, in terms of, you know, structures of organic molecules, models. But we have to know these are only models, because we cannot see this in reality. This is not how these things look like.
No. So, for example, an electron cloud is more a probability than a real orbital planet system, right? It's more, then it starts to become really hairy when you go to the atom and quantum level, right? But
but
it's interesting that you have, above the quantum level, which is a really weird world, you have already organic chemistry. That is, you can come surprisingly far by understanding atoms and small molecules like Lego boxes. So I know just below that you have the weird quantum world, but it really condenses this into a really specific, so in a sense, organic chemistry and biochemistry, if you like Lego, you have a pretty good advantage already. It doesn't behave that weird anymore. Mm-hmm. So I really love that organic chemistry.
Yeah, it's like building blocks of everything. But you know, it's building blocks, but there's always an odd color in these building blocks, and this sometimes makes this that it's not, something doesn't work as you expected by the theory. There's always can be some effects that are coming from the quantum world or from the solvent world and so on. So the whole thing is complex, and this, you know, this brings us actually very nice to coffee when we start to talk about organic chemistry, because organic coffee is organic chemistry. So organic chemistry is the chemistry of the carbon atom, of the molecules that are related to the carbon atom chemistry, right?
Yeah.
And the whole coffee basically is maybe a few percent minerals, which is inorganic, and then we have everything else organic. And this is to just also continue with how my world into coffee comes from this fundamental analytical chemistry plant extract science. So I started to work with antioxidants, polyphenols, and we know that coffee is also very strong in antioxidant activity. And this is how a part of my thesis, my PhD thesis, was also about coffee antioxidants. And I come into contact with Professor Yeretsian from the Zurich University of Life Sciences, where I am also now working since then, where I did a part of my experimental work for my PhD. I was started in 2011 on coffee antioxidants. And this is where I made this bridge from just being focused on chemistry and all different plants, extracts, polyphenols, and all these molecules, into being more focused into coffee. And I really started to like this topic, because I realized that many of those other materials that I was studying, they're quite well known. We can sum up everything that we know, what is in there, what molecules are, how they affect us, you know, the bioactivity, the you know, the stringency of tannins and things like this. You can analyze and you can say out so much percent of this or that molecule or the other molecule. But when it comes to coffee, suddenly it's such a more studied topic than what I studied before, but we know less about it. And that's why I started. This is really exciting from a scientific point of view. And this is something that really needs to be studied much more. And I went into this field. And this is when I also, of course, with coffee, you cannot only study it as a, you know, as a subject of the research, because it has too much context with the sensory, right? Because it's a thing that we consume. So this is when I also started to discover specialty coffee and all different coffees, and then it's just, you know, from then on it started everything, the whole story, right?
Yeah. So right now you are only working with the coffee science, right? You're not doing other things as well?
I am 95% on coffee science, yes. There's sometimes other things that are related to the methodologies that we use in our lab that I help others out, but it's mainly coffee science. So my focus is on what we call the transformation of the coffee. So this is understanding how we need to transform the chemicals in the green beans, the green bean, into something that we extract. Yeah. So this is studying roasting processes, grinding of coffee, stability of aroma, release rates of aroma, the behavior of the aroma in coffee particles, the freshness of coffee, the degassing process, the packaging, and so on. So everything in this field, this is my main topic of study. But of course, I really like coffee as an, I'm a coffee enthusiast, a coffee geek. So I really want to learn everything about coffee from the farming, the green bean, the quality to consumption.
That's good to also have the personal excitement about just drinking coffee, right? That's a big advantage.
Yes, I think if you want to be really an expert in one field, you also have to be personally attached to it and be enthusiastic about it, and not only do it as a subject of study, but really also dig deep into it from a, you know, like really enthusiasm is needed to be able to understand something really well.
Great. And Samu, could you, if you should choose one thing you are most excited about working on right now, that is not a secret, you might have some secret projects, but what are you most excited about working on right now?
I'm really excited. We are working on with a startup that is developing a new roaster, where we are trying to understand how roasting relates to chemistry of the coffee. This is something that was quite studied also about, you studied, right, quite about this. And I cannot say everything in detail at the moment, but there's the topic of the acids that come up that we discussed already before.
Ah, yes.
And you remember we were talking that there's some things that are, despite we studied acids in coffee as scientists, I'm not saying, but not me personally, a scientist, studied acids in coffee since a long time. There's many coffees that have been analyzed in the organic acid composition in coffee, but we still don't know what exactly it is with the acids in coffee. So I've been really excited about this because I found that something so, on the surface, so simple and probably has been clarified what is the case decades ago. We still don't know actually how all the acid, organic acids in coffee work together. And I'm excited about this. It's not directly the part of the project, right? But it's something that we studied in the project. But then there's a small, narrow thing in the project, which is like, wow, this is so exciting. We really have to look deeper into this. And what would be an outcome if we did more experiments after we finished the project?
So this is for a startup. So there's some funding related to this, right? So when can we, and I guess there's a lot of secret stuff about this, but there will be elements published at some point, right? Because that's what scientific or institutions does. So when can the listeners here expect to see some interesting stuff that you can't say now that will be?
I'm not sure when from this part. We always have, just to explain how we work at our university, we work mainly on industry-funded projects, which we are split into two things. One is the data that is produced by the project, and one is the methodology that is produced by the project. And in our agreements with partners, the data is always the property of the partner, and the methodology is property of us.
Okay.
So we can use methodology to further improve the understanding of coffee, but if we have project with a partner who wants to know something, then of course the data is the property of the partner. So that's why perhaps being an university group or a university scientist, I have relatively little publications from a scientific point of in a scientific field, because many things are confidential.
Yeah.
But we are trying to get also with, you know, scientists from the companies that we work with to get things out to, you know, to try to make them public.
Okay. Yeah, because we have this industrial PhD with Ida in the company, and we have a publication plan because of, we have to. So we'll come out with the first article soon, and then the next one hopefully before mm-hmm. summer, and then the third in the fall on sensory methodology. So okay.
We do have for example papers that are in plan with our partners. One is on the aroma behavior in ground coffee particles with the relation to temperature and particle size. So having the diffusion coefficient, going really deep into physical chemistry, diffusion coefficients, activation energies for the aroma release and so on. But again, right now we are waiting for an approval that this data could be released to be published.
Yeah, and the organic acid research, is that part of the roasting project as well?
No, that's not part of this project that we're doing. The project is, I can say it's a company called Micafi. It's a startup that's making a roaster with the goal to make it artificial intelligence control of the roasting.
Okay,
So this is the public part. So the goal is to have control of the roasting based on a selection of the a pre-selection of desired sensory attributes and roast attributes of a coffee, and that a coffee is selected by an algorithm, not by a person.
Yeah, because I saw that UC Davis, they published a meta-analysis about organic acids last year, I think. That was mm-hmm. really interesting, but it wasn't really critical in the sense of, and this is where we've also done, and I'm very curious, I don't know how much you can say about your research, but we are in the publication stage now, and there are so many angles, and this is also this is what I speak about here. If you have a new kind of subject, there are so many questions that you can ask, and that will lead to, if it's a new area, there are hundreds of different projects you can do. Mm-hmm. So I was really excited when I saw the UC Davis project, because I thought, that's amazing. But I was also a bit worried if our research was then not interesting anymore, because perhaps they covered it, but they didn't. I'm really curious about what area you will cover, so that we can kind of get a more clearer picture of what's going on. But perhaps if I don't know how far you are and how much you can talk about
it's
stuff
not,
like
it's
that.
It's not that far that I would have any clear picture for now.
Okay.
It's an ongoing thing. So it's a thing that I'm really excited about for the future. And
okay, so perhaps we can have an episode in 6 months when our work is out, and then you can complement with the data that you have that's probably very different. And it might be that it seems from your data that ours is wrong, and then we have the whole scientific kind of improvement of methodology and conclusions. Tried to make a really simple setup where we are proving something. And I'm really curious to get your feedback, but let's save that for a later episode. But
Let's save this for later. Perhaps we can once talk only about the acids in coffee and acidity.
Yes, let's do that in a later episode.
And I should not worry that somebody would cover everything in one paper about coffee, because this is the beauty of coffee. There's so many processes. There's different origins, different varieties, processing methods, roast profiles, extraction methods, and the number of possibilities of coming up to a coffee brew, it's basically infinite in the end, you know, because you can vary everything to a small extent. But even if you consider that some, what you're talking about in your previous, you know, episodes, that a small change will not have
a
measurable effect. Even if you look at all the measurable effect of all the possible coffees that you can brew in the world, is from a practical point of view infinite.
And we started with a really, really simple setup where we can say a very little about a few things, which is a which is also, so the fair criticism about our study is it's very narrow, which means that we just need more research. So we are not saying everything that is to be said about organic acids, but again, also following the principles that I'm laying out, it's much better to have a simple point about few things that are certain, and then to build up from there, rather than trying to say everything about everything and not really saying anything about anything.
I do agree. This is one of the very really good points that you're pointing out in the podcast. It's about the most simple explanation, because what I see more and more in the coffee world is people come up with wild explanations about what they see, when in reality there's a simple explanation that can explain this. And it's not only in coffee, it's everywhere like this, because this is how our brain works. We just try to look at the explanations, and when we find one that we're happy with, we are happy. It's a good explanation, but it's maybe so complex that there's a way more simple explanation which explains the same principle. And then the likelihood of which one is correct and which one is not correct is the simple one is much more likely to be the correct explanation, even without knowing which is correct or not.
And that's also one of the keeping to the simple stuff. It's probably more correct because it's closer to what's actually going on at a deeper level. That's one of the things. And that also when it comes to coffee roasting, if you keep to just the understanding that you have got a heat source and that you've got a pile of something being heated up, that's really what's going on. And people want to digress into a lot of curves and weird calculations, which is okay, but you're going farther and farther from the first principles of the system that you're trying to control. And then you lose the intuition. So it's really the simpler it is, and the simpler you keep things, the better you also develop your intuition from the empirical level of what's really going on.
Exactly. I think it's a good point about the roasting, because in principle, in the end, roasting is just running a chemical reaction. And the simple explanation is, for a chemical reaction, you need temperature and time.
Yes, exactly.
And now roasting in different ways is just applying this temperature in different temperature gradients with time into beans. And now the question is also, is it homogeneous? Is the temperature inside and outside of the one single bean the same or not? And what this gradient is? This is, of course, then the always unknown variable in the roasting process. And then through all these complex things from the outside, you know, like rate of rise and these things, you're perhaps helping yourself understanding the roasting process, where in reality it's only about the temperature inside the bean.
Yeah, and the rate of rise is something about the speed of the process. And this, when it comes to my principle, third principles of form follows function, means that you should only speak about rate of rise when it's relevant, and not when it's irrelevant, or if you could have spoken about what you're speaking about in simpler terms. I've noticed, for example, I listened to Tim Venlebo's podcast, and it was Patrick Rolf interviewing Tim about how did they go about transitioning from a probat to a Loring. And Tim was always, just talking about, yeah, we tried to add a lot of energy in the beginning or in the middle. So he was staying with the first principles. He was staying with talking about adding a lot of energy at different phases, rather than saying, then I went for a high rate of rise here. If you have a high rate of rise, it is a consequence of a high flame. So it's better to keep your vocabulary with the first principles of the system, rather than digressing into these derived calculations of derived things, right? So in your vocabulary, try to stay with the basic stuff, rather than kind of go into to the more fluffy derived values of dependent parameters, right? To stick to the independent parameters, which is the first principles and the cause of everything going on in the system. But it's weird, because it's, and I think as a scientist, and I think that's also talking about the empirical, the kind of the discipline that you've had to go through to really make sure that you didn't make errors when trying to think about the empirical world that you were investigating. I think that that just gives a kind of respect for not saying something that is too complicated that will confuse you. Because if you just get a small confusion introduced, then your way of understanding what you're doing is just completely lost, right? You have to stay disciplined. Otherwise, you will lose your understanding on what actually is going on at a level you can't see, right?
Yes, exactly. And this is why you need always an experimental plan if you want to study something, you know? And you need an experimental plan for everything that you're going to study. Otherwise, you're not getting anywhere. And you need an experimental plan and the correct methods to find what you are what you want to find out. And I really want to quote you in one of your podcasts. You said that the quote, "Your correct method is at the heart of the reliable knowledge." I think this is such an important statement for science and for coffee and for everything. Whatever you do, you have to first think about, before even planning the experiment, you first want to think about the correct method that you're going to do to investigate this.
Yes.
Because without the method, you will never get the results.
Yeah, and without the correct method, you'll not get relevant results. And without a method at all, you'll just have a lot of opinion. And that's the point of Plato. He said that the difference between opinion and episteme, or true knowledge, is methodology. Mm-hmm. And that said thousands of years ago, and it's still something that is only implemented places. But this is sometimes when you go as a coffee geek, or go could also be a fitness geek or whatever. When you go to a university, you'll see very few kind of apparatuses. I'm sure if I go to your place, and I have been there, you'll only see a few. You've got DCMS, HPLC, NMR, and you only have a few methods, but they are just, all of them are just optimized infinitely to a method, right? So every time you have a question, you'll try to reduce it to be answered to one of these methods. So it's not that you can kind of geek out with a lot of different methodologies, because you can only use the ones that historically has been really proven to work, right? So and that's also, I'm more at method. So I feel that in Coffee Mind, we are method experts. We also, of course, after the years, coffee geeks, but the method is really, I'm more as when people ask me about things, I'm always trying to kind of, okay, how can we do this correctly from a method perspective, where clients, they have thousands of questions and not really a real goal. And I need to know what the goal is. And we need to confine ourselves to one question. And if the client can't confine themselves to one question, then I have a problem, because I don't know which method to use. You wouldn't know which machine to go to, right? Before you have one and only one question that is structured around the most relevant question that they want to know. Research, that's expensive. So then we can probably have 15 questions answered. No. We have to find the one that you really want to know, and then we'll go.
You need to have a question and a hypothesis, how to solve this, and then you need to apply the correct method. And this could be, you know, doesn't need to be expensive instruments when you were talking about method and then the experimental plan. We can talk about, you know, you extract espresso, and then what is the correct method to evaluate? Oh, am I evaluating by weight of the beverage? Am I evaluating by the volume of the beverage? Do I just measure TDS and not care about anything at all? Or I don't care anything at all and I just give it to somebody to taste? And those are four different methods that we use in coffee, and perhaps sometimes we indiscriminately just use them randomly, right? But not realizing that each of them is connected to one another, and each of them gives us additional information to better understand this beverage. And this is this thinking, you know, that you need to apply the correct method for what you want to know.
And this is interesting, because again, science doesn't need to be complicated. It could be the contrary. For example, I've been thinking about developing a really simple course with the Nova Simonelli Knowledge Hub, where we will simply measure, for example, the color of a coffee and measure TDS. and then teach people to make a parameter estimate, which is the 95 confidence interval, to get a sense of how many readings do I need to do in order to get a narrow enough 95% confidence interval for the purpose that I need. So what is the threshold, for example, color threshold for my QC protocol? Do I accept plus minus 3 actron? Then if you almost have an apparatus that always give you the very close kind of readings, only plus minus 1.5, then you can perhaps get away with doing 2 readings. But if you're doing research where it has to be exactly the same color, where you are working with plus minus 1 actron, then you might have to do 5 readings. So teaching people the idea that you have variation, but you can beat the variation with repeated measurement. But the number of repetitions you need depends on the question that you are asking, which will tell you how narrow does it need to be. So that's the one thing. It's a pretty simple thing, right? It's not advanced, but it's really important. And then you could do a t-test where, for example, could do a slightly darker roast. And then you would have to see how many readings do you need to have before you can actually see that they are different in the ANOVA or the t-test, right? To just let people understand what is a parameter estimate and what is how do you calculate a p-value. And it really, and as you said, it doesn't need to be advanced, it just needs to be specific, right?
I think this is great to do such very very simple experiments that actually everybody's kind of doing, but not in a systematic way. They don't approach it from a design of experiment. They just do it and then have the results. But if you make a plan how to do these experiments, then you can also derive much more of the knowledge from the experiment. Yes. But of course, here we're having one thing. We're assuming everything is completely random because we're using statistic normal distribution. But one thing that I really sometimes... and missing to have more understanding of this, and not only in coffee, but also in science in general, is the systematic errors. Because there can always be a case where this is not, something is not behaving completely randomly, and you have a certain systematic error. So it means that there's some sort of, you know, instrumental bias, human bias, you are handling a sample manually at some point in the experiments you're doing, and you're making a mistake, which is not random, but either appears or not, perhaps, so to speak, or is an instrumental bias. For example, just simply TDS measurements, for example. TDS is total dissolved solids, right? So total dissolved solids means if you evaporate the water, what is left solid, those are your total dissolved solids. But everybody now is using refractometers, which are extremely well calibrated on a certain range of TDSs, but and compositions of coffee at certain extraction yield. But if you're perhaps, I'm not saying this is the case, but no, just hypothetically, if you're outside of a certain range of an instrument which it was not meant for, not designed for this use, perhaps you are not within the calibration zone. So the instrument has some sort of bias, either to a too high value, too low value, and this way you are making a systematic error in your measurement. So no matter how many repetitions you're doing, you can measure it 1,000 times, and 1,000 times get the same exact value. You know exactly what your scatter of the value is. But if you made a systematic error somewhere, either through a human error or through an instrumental bias in your measurements, you will have an error.
That's interesting, because TDS is something that have annoyed me a bit over the years. I just get so big variations when I read. It might be that I'm not a barista and haven't done it enough, but I have done it quite a lot of times, I would say. And I just don't really trust the value. And then also I have 3 different refractometers, and I've measured the same coffee on all of them, and they are definitely not measuring the same. That's a really good example of instrumental error, huh?
This is calibration. This is instrumental error, which in most of the cases can be well corrected if you make a standard solution. So So this is another thing that is perhaps to talk about are the controls or calibrants.
Yeah.
So both. So in this case, it actually you need a calibration solution. So you need to have a solution of a known TDS, right? You need to line up those refractometers that give different values, and you need to put the same solution of a known TDS to each of them and see how much they're off, and then recalibrate their calibration to match the number. So this is what in terms of chemical analysis, we're always doing with every and nearly every analysis that we're doing, because when we want to, for every analysis, when we want to have quantitative number, we do a calibration. So yeah, we've known something that we know how much it is in.
And this is interesting because the I remember from medical statistics that you've got something called the gold standard, and then you have the clinical tests that mm-hmm. are, so the gold standard in medical is expensive, time consuming, and with risk, right? It's typically with the invasive, mm-hmm. so that you need to operate somebody. But often you can develop a test that is almost it's good enough because it's cheaper, faster, and non-invasive, right? Mm-hmm. So at the university you have all the equipment to do the to measure the gold standard way, but people in a daily operations they only have a TDS meter. But it could be interesting if you can help them calibrate it so it actually becomes not only 80% as good as the gold standard, but 99%. That's an interesting help.
This is the calibration part, right? The second part is the instrumental bias, because it might be calibrated only on this number, but and you know, plus minus some number, but it might not be calibrated on another value. And if yeah. I'm not mistaken, from the factory, these instruments are calibrated on instant coffee solution.
Oh, okay.
I'm not 100% sure, but this is somehow I remember reading it somewhere, perhaps in a patent of one of those, that it's calibrated by, say, it's a refractive measurement, and the refractive measurements is a function of the concentration of a instant coffee concentration, because this is something you can very precisely dose into create a solution of a known instant coffee concentration, and therefore you have a calibrated measure, right? But then where we can make an error here is instant coffee has slightly different composition than the solids. They have a slightly different composition than, for example, specialty white roast, because in most cases it's heavily extracted, hydrolyzed, dark roasted coffee. So perhaps there are some ranges where it might have a bias. Not saying that it has, because it's not tested. I have no idea. But just, you know, just speaking purely hypothetically about what kind of situations can bring us to an instrumental bias.
But it's interesting that it also depends on the purpose of the reading, right? Because sometimes, and this is very relevant in product development and quality control, perhaps you don't really care about the true TDS, but you just want to repeat and have a way of quantifying that you did repeat what you did before. For example, the I think we talked about this during the CAS session, that in a sense it doesn't matter that the temperature reading in a coffee roaster, if it shows you the right value or not, you're just using it for repeatability. Mm-hmm. But this is where it's very important that you the form follows function. What method do you choose? So that if people know that they're using it for product development and quality control, they don't need to care about that much about the TDS. But sometimes they might find themselves in a situation where they really want to know if it's correct, and then they might seek out you, or perhaps if I don't know if we could make available a way of calibrating your own TDS meter, then people would have value of investing in going through that process. So sometimes it's needed and sometimes it's not needed. It depends on the purpose of the process that you're trying to control, right?
Yes, exactly. So again, we're talking about the correct method for the application. So correct method is not only which tool you're using, but also how the tool is calibrated and set up.
Yeah,
sometimes we use the same tool in a much more simple way, and sometimes we use the tool to its full potential, depends on the need.
Yeah, and sometimes you can use a much more expensive piece of equipment that doesn't really even give you a better result than something if you just, for example, weigh the coffee or evaporate the water or something much simpler, right? Okay.
I just thought of another this bias, instrumental bias, actually, where you're mentioning quality control, and if it's quality control, then it's all good. But for a case, for example, for measuring the humidity of roasted coffee, the moisture content of roasted coffee and green coffee, you know, we use this. The standard method is by drying, right? So you dry it to evaporate all the water. But there's this capacitive meters which measure in a few seconds the moisture content. And there, in a quality control setting, for example, if you have you measure the moisture of roasted coffee, and if the coffee was quenched by water and there is high moisture on the surface of the bean and not inside of the bean, this will bring a completely different measurement than the reality, for as an example.
Yeah,
because
water is not distributed perfectly.
Exactly, yes. And then you might have, you know, a measurement of 15% moisture content in roasted coffee, which is completely impossible, when in reality you have, you know, you quenched it, there's some more water, so you maybe have 3-3.5%, but the meter is easily saying 15%. So it's kind of a complete systematic error, but it comes from not applying the correct method, because the method is not only the instrument that is used, but it's also what you do with the sample before you use the instrument.
Yeah.
So in this case, the part of the method also has to be that you need to take this coffee, put it into a bag, leave it standing for a certain time that the moisture is homogeneously distributed between all the beans, and then measure the sample.
And again, it's a problem when you're using something that is not the gold standard, right? Using a quick method, one that is quicker, cheaper, and less invasive. I remember I have when I was teaching a medical research design, I had kids, so I knew exactly the just to give the readers an more perhaps down to earth explanation between the gold standard test and a quick test. If you have a kid, sometimes you have to change the diaper because they've made what's it called? Yeah, you know, the nature's things needs to go out again. So the gold standard of testing whether you need to change the diaper is to actually have a look, right? And sometimes you do that because you can have a false negative and a false positive. Sometimes a false positive or a false negative is when it doesn't smell, but there's something, right? and a false positive is if it was just air and nothing came out. And most often you are right when you don't take a look, because it's quicker and less invasive and all this, to just infer from does it smell or not. But you are only 80% right, because you can have a true positive, a true negative, and you can have a false positive and a false negative. So when you're using a faster, cheaper, and less invasive method, you are most often wrong. But if you use the gold standard, then you are always right or wrong. So, but it's because most often when we are, when, for example, the TDS is a perfect example, it's a cheaper, faster and less invasive. You're not drying the coffee, right? You're not destroying the coffee that you're using as you do in the oven method. So we are often using less than gold standard in our daily lives, which is great. But then we need to be even more careful about how we can be wrong, because it's not the gold standard. So as you said, if you assume that it doesn't matter if it's quenched or not, then we have to be more careful. But well, of course, we shouldn't turn every roastery into some. They shouldn't buy a GCMS, a HPLC, and an NMR before they have the QC protocol nailed, right?
Of course not. There's always an optimum cost effectiveness way of doing something. And the cost effectiveness in a roastery quality control lab differs very much from a chemistry research coffee lab.
But perhaps, Simon, we should have a session, an offline session, where we could kind of brainstorm if we could help make some really simple methods to help people with the most normal kind of quick tests done in a roastery, and see if it could be fun to find out ways of helping the community that way. Simon, we talked a bit about this that. In my podcast, normally I consider myself a nice guy, and I am, but I was just a bit overwhelmed how negative I sounded and how much I actually, because it's all the things that Ida and I have been speaking about behind the scenes, and I just thought I have to put it out there, and then I just need to kind of get the honest result from the world. On all the things where I was wrong. And this is exactly why I wanted to invite somebody with the capacity like you, Samuel, to kind of comment because I really wanted you to kind of tell me what you liked about it and what you didn't like, because we talked about that when I told you that I was a bit worried about how people would react and I'm a very negative and kind of tearing a lot of things down. You said, but that's because that's the scientific method.
Yes,
it's the scientific method. Exactly, you are very critical. So
you have to be negative in order to prove something. Because if you're not negative, if you just accept something as true, always as true, then you're not getting anywhere. Then you find, okay, this is true. I will not study anything about it. But I think personally, for me, the best way to prove something is to try to disprove it. And if you use all your means to try to disprove it and you cannot disprove it, then it is most likely true.
Yeah, or at least it's the best model we have of the world right now, right?
Or at least this, yes. Because true, what is true is also, that's a philosophical question, right? But within the context of the knowledge that we have at the moment, that's the best answer that we can give. And this is my approach, also how I work in science and in coffee. I try to look for an answer. And once I have an answer, I don't stop there. Then you need to test. Because one is the making the we were talking earlier about finding the question to answer. That's the first thing. Then a hypothesis. You need to decide on the methods. You need to make an experimental plan. You need to make all the measurements, have no systematic errors. You need to do the statistics to find how reliable your result is. And then you have a result, right? But then you should not stop there. You should then try to question the result and then ask yourself, first thing is, does this result make sense, you know?
Yeah. How could I be wrong? Not because... Yeah. And science is not an infinitely self-critical kind of approach. It's just you have to remember to be self-critical, right? Because only by being self-critical and being very critical towards others, then we kind of progress as a community.
Yes, exactly. Because if you think of it like this, you come to one conclusion and you start to be self-critical, you can come up easily with four or five questions, you know, and this is how we need to progress in the community, in society, and in coffee. We need to, you know, study something, find a result, and then ask ourselves, you know, is this correct? Try to get more questions. And this is what actually happens. Sometimes we try to answer something, and then we find out that this answer actually brings us five new problems that we have not thought about this before. And even without having this answer, we would never have thought about these problems that we have. And this is how we progress.
Yeah. And this is where there's not a lot of that in the coffee community yet. So I kind of tried to come up with a lot of things that could be better from a method perspective. And this is where it was interesting to hear your that you said, yeah, that's just the scientific approach to kind of be that critical, and that it could be interesting to have more of that in the community to get us further. And this is, for example, the SCA copying protocol. I'm really trying to be very, very specific about why I think it's not a good method. And I haven't really heard many other, I've never really heard a lot of criticism about it. So that's why I was a bit worried if somebody would be offended and stuff like that. But, and that might still come, but that's okay, because then at least we can talk about this at a higher level, right?
Yes. But of course, you know, this all sounds negative, but our goal is, in terms of you and me both being also educators in coffee and try to popularize science, we should, you know, focus and try to design experiments that make this kind of things that are actually not fun at all, and you have to be negative and critical, but we should have kind of try to design things to do this in a fun way.
Yeah.
As you know, you're doing a lot with the sensory kits and this coffee mind experiments, which are kind of fun way of learning things that are actually kind of should not be fun in principle, yeah. Because you have to be critical, you have to be negative, and you have to be strict in order to get to the conclusive results.
And this is where it becomes really interesting. What role does science have? Because and this is also one of the things that I remember a quote from Stephen Lee, that I think that we want to express art, right? That your personal excitement about coffee is artistic and not technical, right? And this is the goal, but in order to make sure to get to create an aesthetic experience, there is some fundamental technicalities that you need to be clear about and not confused about. So for example, I mean, just while we speak about this, I'm envisioning that in order to make the community progress, we need more explicit collaboration between scientists and the educators in the business, because the educators are great. They help people create better results. But I've been an educator for many years, and I've said a lot of things that's not true. And I've also noticed that a lot of educators are not really self-critical. They'll say something that I just know that is completely wrong. And I'm just thinking, why don't you just spend 3 minutes fact-checking before you say mm-hmm. something about mm-hmm. science,
yeah.
so that you don't have to say something that's just not true.
Yes.
But then again, I don't want to discourage people to do education, because all the scientists will tell you that you are never saying anything wrong. I want to kind of, we need to work together, scientists and educators, to make sure that the criticism becomes constructive so that we can express the art. We don't want to kill the art with scientific negativity, right? So it's mm-hmm. a balance. And this is why I think the responsibility talking between scientists and educators is really it's really a big responsibility, because only then it will be constructive and not destructive.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it also has to do with what you said. Oh, you know, take 3 minutes to find the real information. You know, perhaps for you it's 3 minutes, but for somebody else doesn't know how to orient, where to look for the information.
Yeah,
this is
that's
where
true.
I think this connection is really, really beneficial, is because if you ask you or me something that we know very well, and I know that I'm not very knowledgeable in everything, but if somebody asks me something, first thing I go, I try to look at the sources, you know. I try to look at the sources, and then I get my opinion about it, you know. And then, and to be honest, in most cases, the answer is, I don't know, you know. I'm not afraid to answer this question. And let's just say I can't say, you know, because I don't have information about this. But sometimes, you know, I get asked something, and I look for sources, and I find sources which are completely disproving the what is the kind of common truth in the coffee. So And this helps, you know, this kind of relation helps both the educators and the scientists to grow. So I get a, when I talk to people who are in education or coffee geeks, and so I also grow myself because they ask me questions for who I don't have answers. And I look into this and I learn myself, which because I would never have questions this question myself.
Yes. So that it's a really amazing kind of connection, science and education, I think. And that's also why I was very disappointed with the SCAE and the SCAA merged. I was still doing the roasting curriculum. And there was a lot of confusion, I guess, that made it just completely, I didn't want to spend more time on it. The kind of the structure we had to work on didn't, it would kill my company. So I opted out in 2018. But one of the things I was really, and why am I not just honest about this? There was no explicit, I asked if the, who is responsible for the joint collaboration between education and research in the organization. And there was nobody. And I really think that in SCA, that it has kind of, the research and the education has, it's never really been collaborating. At least not since the merger, and I hope that that's just a kind of a confusion in the establishing years, that at some point they'll strengthen that kind of connection, because only then I think that there's full speed on helping the community. Otherwise, it's just getting a lot of money for research and get as much money from education without really trying to systematically make research and education work together for the better of the community. So I think that's a very, very important connection, and it has to be an explicit responsibility among specific people in an organization to work. It won't just happen by coincidence. It happens when you speak with people in the community, and I've noticed that the ZHV has invested a lot of time for you to visit all the events before Corona. And I think that is a habit or an investment to help the community, to make sure that you spend time together simply. And I think that has been amazing to see how much you've invested time to be at Roasters Camp, at World of Coffee, and all these things. Yeah. And that's also where we've met and talked several times. So I think that's an example of an institution deciding to invest in connecting, right? That's great.
Yes, I mean, these are some of the best experiences I have in coffee, you know, go to events and connect with people, because there's so many different backgrounds in coffee, because there's no university to do a bachelor in coffee or a master's in coffee for now, right?
Yeah.
And this means that people from all sorts of background come into coffee, you know, from more of a science, natural sciences point of view, like you and me, but you also, for example, you having a philosophy training, and then people come from economic, from finance, you know, and you start to get a completely different point of views of some things. And this is, I think, where the coffee community is so strong. It's really strong because there's people from the most diverse backgrounds, as you can imagine, in one community. Yes. And yes. This is where it's very strong, but also it brings this, you know, negatives, because in the end, the coffee beverage and coffee bean, those are chemicals. It's chemistry. And what is happening when you're doing something with it, it's physics. So in the end, it has to do all the explanations, the interpretations, the understanding. It's mostly down to chemistry and physics.
It is indeed. And that can be a bit difficult for people to navigate correctly. But I think we talked about acids and also sugars, and it people are talking about sugars and acids all the time as if it's true that they modulate, for example, right? Sam, right? We found in some of our research that there's a clear modulation of perceived sweetness, and the sugars are below sensory threshold and they don't change, right?
Yeah,
so it's not the sugars. And also the acids, and everybody wants to talk about molecules, and if you don't have a science background, you don't know that it's much more complicated than that, right?
It's much more complicated, because you know this is only until we start to consume it. what I was talking about, physics and chemistry. Once you put the coffee into a human body, then there's a lot of other things, right? Then it's the more of a physiological effects on your receptors, which is kind of also chemistry, biochemistry. But this is only the first step. The second step is, you know, how this interacts with your brain, with your neurons, and then how you interact with it, you know, and all goes all the way to sociology here and the consumer behavior and so on. So it makes an immensely complex field.
Yeah.
Which from one point of view is really why it's so exciting to study coffee, right? Because
it is indeed, and the listeners might then think, oh, it's very complicated, and it is, because there's a lot of links and there's a lot of complicated models, but again, it's also refreshing to think, but the best models are simple, right?
Yeah.
the best explanations are simple, so in a sense that's kind of reassuring, and it also makes it easier for you to kind of communicate.
Even if you don't know why things happen, you know, doing something very well in coffee, it's relatively simple if you don't complicate too much everything. You know, you have, for example, you were talking when you were part of our classroom at our course, you know, this approach that you just roast, how was it, 9 minutes with 1.5 minute development time or something like this with a roaster. And then for most of the cases, you will get a reasonably good roast. You will not be having roast defects. And there's, you know, other standards in the extraction, in everything. There's some sort of, you know, things that if you follow, you can be quite good without the understanding. But the question is, we want to be, you know, strive for better, and this needs understanding to go a step ahead.
Yeah, and that's when I see people talking about you need to understand the chemistry of roasting to be a good coffee roaster. I completely disagree. You don't need to know anything about chemistry to great coffee. You just need to know who do you want to please, what green coffees are needed, and how can you roast it in terms of time and temperature. That's it. It is as simple as of that. Yes. Then if you are a geek like we are, we want to kind of go into the chemistry to understand what's going on, and that can also help with innovation and education and stuff like that. But in order to roast coffee, you don't need to know anything about chemistry.
Yes, that's where the coffee is so interesting, because you can take so many point of views of how you look at it. You know, you can just dismiss all the science and look at it from an art point of view, or it can be the most complex science you can imagine.
Yes.
You know, we still don't know what the composition of, let's say, half or 60% of the coffee, of the solids in the coffee or the coffee bean is, you know, like melanoidins. We don't know what those chemicals are, but we know they bring a brown color to coffee, and they're antioxidants. We know part of their structure, but nobody really knows what exactly they are. And this is why coffee is incredibly interesting to work with.
Yeah. And this is where I think science, one of the best things that science can do is to kind of debunk all the myths, right? Not to tell non-scientists that they shouldn't say anything, because they kind of make it, but at least to weed out all the nonsense that's said, because what's left after you weeded out the nonsense is amazing, right? But it's great to have removed all these things. And also over the years I've been teaching, and I'm pretty sure that 80% of what I say is true, and then 20% is probably not, but I don't know what the 20 is. So, and that's my problem. I don't know what the 20 is. And this is why I would like somebody with critical thinking, such as you and others, to kind of help me out, weed out my nonsense, right? Because I'm not sure that I know myself what it is.
Exactly, because we are not experts on everything. There's always things that you miss. You know, you might be sloppy. You're not perfect at everything. You make mistakes. And it's good that we are a community and we can correct ourselves. And you can say, oh, look, Morten, you did not do this correctly. Or you say, oh, Samuel, look, this completely doesn't make sense. And I'll be like, okay, yeah, sure, I was wrong. You know, this really didn't make sense. And this happens, you know, should happen quite daily in a lab of scientists, because if you have so many things which are really hard to understand and which are not really known, it's completely normal that some assumptions that you make within the information that you got, you had at a certain time, are suddenly not correct anymore because you have new information which completely disproves the information the theory had before.
Yeah, and that's when I continue this podcast, and hopefully you will hear it. Then one day you will call me and tell me I'm wrong with something. I'm looking forward to that day, Samuel, because is there anything, if just kind of to on the last part of the podcast here? So if you should mention one thing you think is the biggest value of the podcast is, and if you can think about. If you should say something where you anything critical about it, I'm very open mm-hmm. to hear that as well. So what do you think is when you heard it, what was kind of refreshing, or what is it that you felt that this is actually useful for the community? This is valuable, and there's not enough of this already. If you should just mention one thing,
I will be now a bit not nasty, but I will mention one thing which is both the best thing and the weakness of the podcast. It's really the depth of it, and looking from a philosophical point of view about science, I think it's amazing because nobody ever looked into coffee science from this point of view as you did in this podcast, really looking into the roots of this, you know, the philosophical thinking of science, of the, you know, of how we worked as a civilization on these principles to advance, right? And translate this into coffee. This is the really an amazing thing. But on the other hand, it's quite a complex topic. You know, it's hard to grasp, and you really need to stay very, very focused to listen to this. And this is something that I think this kind of content, it's always a problem.
Yes, and I'm also making a joke about that. I think in I don't know if it's episode 6 that I noticed that this is very long and very complicated, and it's a bit ironic for somebody who is kind of trying to promote simplicity. but I think that's also this podcast is made for the people who are deep in either education or science. So my podcast. This is not for the beginners, mm-hmm. and so this is with this podcast. I'm trying to influence the influencers in a sense, or my peers. I'm really trying to have the discussion at the highest level, because then if we as a community, let's say we are some thought leaders, we need to have a forum to speak about these things where we can just speak openly and without thinking, oh, who's my audience? And so for me, it's the coffeepreneurs who want to get the deepest knowledge and at the deepest level, because there are some people of those out there, right? And mm-hmm. these are the ones who would tune in. And I'm also planning to do some much shorter episodes, a mm-hmm. much simpler hands-on. But I just wanted to get this long, detailed kind of podcast series out there, at least so it exists for the people who want to take things at this level. So
definitely I also learned from listening to this podcast, because to be honest, I did not know all the philosophical backgrounds that are used for the things that we do in science, since I start from the experimental approaches in science which use this, but I did not know where this actually all comes from and what kind of thinking was historically used that we developed these methodologies and concepts.
And it's interesting, because I've also had, you know, when I studied biology, we also had theory of science, and I wasn't really interested, and few were, to be honest. And then I was teaching theory of science for medical students at the university, and it was very clear that they were only there because they had to be there. So when you study something and you get theory of science, it's all often the most kind of boring. On yeah, that's where you can kind of just meet and you talk a bit, right? And this is where with my major in philosophy, where I specialized in theory of science. That's not my opinion, right? That I majored mm-hmm. in that. So I really feel very strongly, positively for this. And that's why I've kind of, and this is why I feel that it's interesting to see that it's actually practically useful to weed out nonsense in a community. So for the first time in my life, I can see that my my long-haired education is practically useful for somebody. So that was actually great to kind of.
That's such a fulfilling moment, right? That you you know that you worked hard for something. Now you see that you're useful in the society. So I kind of took a different approach, you know, with my Instagram posts that I started to do lately, and I think the kind of the frustrations that in this what we're kind of talking about, and it's not really frustrations, but you know, these things that are happening that led me to start to get to the coffee community to closer to approach it. It's exactly what you're doing to professionals. I try to do to the most, you know, coffee geeks and coffee nerds and coffee enthusiasts. Just try to see how we think as a scientist and really try to simplify it, but in a very narrow topic, you know, deep in, but very simple, you know, and try to look at some things that, you know, you mentioned this about the sweetness, right? Really just try to really explain in an extremely simple way, just one fact. There's not enough sugars in coffee that they make it sweet, you know, and that's it. And not to go into too much around, just that present how we know that this is the case. There is data, people did studies, but don't go into anything around because then people get overwhelmed with information. Yes. And I think this is another way of looking at it. It's you know, to promote this thinking that we have is really to just do it really stepwise by very, very small steps.
Yeah. And I think I also noticed your Instagram post and I love them. I think this is exactly reaching out as I said, you know, we need to, as a scientist, we need to reach out to the community and the community needs to reach out to us. We need to have a systematic collaboration. And I think your Instagram posts are amazing for kind of starting reaching out, starting this awareness and collaboration. So that hopefully you'll keep on doing them.
I will keep doing it. I have a next one in the pipeline about acidity and
great stuff.
But I'm a bit afraid that we'll only raise more questions than answer questions.
But that's what we like as scientists, right? Anyway. Great, but Samuel, I think we've exceeded an hour that I promised you we would kind of keep it to, but I also said it might be a bit longer, which happened. So thank you so much for your time. And how will people be able to kind of meet you? Or you've got your CAS course coming up, right? And what other activities do you have where people from the community could get in touch with you?
Yes, we have at our university, we have a certificate called the CAS, Certificate of Advanced Studies. So it's a course for anybody who has already a university degree to continue education. And we focus, of course, on coffee, everything about coffee from biology of the coffee plant to the coffee consumer through, you know, trading, green coffee, processing, roasting, grinding, extraction. Everything is covered. It's an online course where we have content. We invite people like experts like from the field, like you, Morten, who talk about certain topics like we talk with you about roasting, and at every session we have such an classroom, and this is one thing where we are trying to interact with the community to bring the scientific knowledge closer. But then we're also involved in coffee events, festivals, also for example now at the upcoming SCA Expo in Boston I will have a workshop about grinding, about how to characterize a grinder. And I'm trying to put some scientific experiments that we're doing on grinding into a workshop. So what can you do yourself with some things, you know? It's kind of, you know, when you dial in a grinder to an extraction that you think for also other things, not only about your extraction, kind of like this, you know, this And we're trying to be involved with the community as much as possible, because this is, I think, an important thing of a scientist is one thing is doing the science, but there's no purpose of science if you don't communicate it.
Yeah. Amazing. Will you also be at World of Coffee?
Yes, also, yes. At World of
Coffee. The same workshop, because I really want to attend that.
There is no workshops at the World of Coffee, unfortunately.
True.
I will have a lecture about the World of Coffee, and I submitted, it's not approved yet, I submitted a lecture to have about performing scientific experiments during online learning, so how to do experiments remote. So I have some nice results from what we did with the students. About roasting defects and what kind of, how can you actually interpret data that you get from completely uncalibrated, unrelated people from around the world.
I'm looking so much forward to that. Great. I also submitted two. I'll see if they'll choose one or none.
What did you submit?
I don't really remember. I think one of them was just the general roasting research we've done, and the other one was the organic acid presentation. And then Ida will also present about her PhD in sensory learning, where we are submitting the first article now. We've got some amazing data. We're so looking so much forward to getting that article out.
I'm really excited about this.
We've been working on it for 8 years now. So finally, that's great. Okay, Samu, what a great pleasure to have you here, and I can just feel that we'll have a lot more to talk about, and hopefully you will agree to participate on more episodes later when we get new topics, and I'm looking very much forward to see you. It will probably be in Poland at World of Coffee the next time, so
probably, yes. Thank you again, Morten, for inviting me. It's always exciting to talk with you. And we have these discussions from time to time, and also with our course. And I'm really happy that people can also listen to one of the discussions that we have, since I kind of like it that it was not really scripted, right? It's really like a free discussion about the topics that we're thinking. Perhaps it brings also some interesting ideas into people, how our minds work when we are together interacting with two crazy scientists.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there's a lot of implications of how you talk and what you talk about as a scientist that might be interesting or not. And if it's not, then people find another podcast. Great. All right. Thank you so much, Samu, and hope to see you soon, if not before World of Coffee. So thank you so much and have a great day and take care.
Thank you, Morten, you too, and have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.